It's Jeremy White and Joe DiBiase.
All I'm saying is, as a society, we missed an opportunity to have the upside-down logo represent that your franchise is in distress.
Culturally,
now those hats are cool,
yeah.
As opposed to, listen, I like this team, and I know things are pretty messed up right now. I'm not happy about it.
It's the new paper bag over your head. Show up to a game with a jersey where the Sabre logo is rotated 90 degrees. You just have one ready to go, so if you're mad at them that day when you wake up, like, they lost yesterday, I'm going to wear the upside-down hat.
Here's our billion-dollar idea, Joe. There's a little thing in the back, and you can undo it and rotate it around and put it back on to represent every day how you feel about the team that you're wearing the hat for.
Here, it's a billion-dollar idea.
We are. We shut down the stream. We're done. We're out of here. We're retiring on this idea now.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on Western New York Sports Giant, WGR Sports Radio 550.
All right, quick question for the stream, the chat. Owen's got it in front of you. Can you see the 7 burn on my forehead or no? Is it visible? Gone? Okay, good. Had a sunscreen incident, maybe?
Sunscreen file?
Sure, yeah.
Gotta open them up.
Yeah. The realization on Saturday morning after being out on the beach all day on Friday for the 4th of July that, I must not have rubbed the sunscreen in on my forehead very well because I look like I'm Harry Potter with, maybe it wasn't quite a lightning bolt. Look like a 7.
Just a little, it's a stylistic choice. You know, it's a temporary tattoo given to you by the sun.
Pretty much.
That's all you got to think about it.
Yeah, the chat is saying it's slightly visible.
Maybe they got better. You know what?
A little bit?
Yeah, you know
a
what?
A little bit. The hat is guarding it.
Oh yeah.
Yep.
There it is.
The 7 tattoo for the week.
I like it.
It'll be gone in a day, probably.
Yeah, it'll be.
Because I'm a 5-year-old and going to rub in my sunscreen on the 4th of July, which I hope everybody had a great 4th. The weather, Mike Schopoy says this about Memorial Day. Is this true of the 4th of July also, that we've never had a bad 4th of July for weather?
I think there were a couple of years when we were still up in Canada at the cottage when we used to have a huge party every year. There were a couple of years where it rained, but it's been years, and it was maybe 1 or 2 times since I've been like alive and sentient.
Okay.
So I think pretty much, yeah.
Usually if we get anything, you would think in July like that, it would be a giant thunderstorm.
Right.
Some sort because of the heat and the humidity and whatnot. So yeah, I hope everyone had a great 4th. The weather was great. It's been hot over the weekend. Jeremy's off this week. So the I saw Del Reed with this take over the weekend. I'm more on board with this after we had such a bad weather spring. Are you not allowed to complain about the weather in the summer being too hot or too humid? Or is that more true this year because we just had a disastrous spring when it comes to how cold it was and how rainy it was and the sun didn't make an appearance until like June 10th, it felt like?
I think that setup of spring gives you maybe a little less. You're just less prepared for how hot it's going to be, so I feel maybe there's more of a right to complain. That's my thought process there, because it has felt so hot.
Because normally I'd want to I would be easier to complain about, it's so humid and it's 90 degrees. Yesterday my car said 93.
Oof.
Well, while I'm driving, not like when you first get in the car and, you know, it's usually higher than
it
is.
Once 107 on there.
Yeah, once it's settled in, we got to about 93. But that would normally for me be, this is brutal, I don't want to go outside when it's like this. But even in me, it's, man, 2 months ago, it was
horrible.
Ridiculous.
It definitely was horrible.
It was absurd.
I personally can't stand the humidity specifically. I hot take alert. I know everybody feels that way. But I will never not complain about the humidity. That if it's too humid, you'll hear about it from me. I don't care what the spring was like. We could have been in the ice age. And if 2 weeks later, if it's 98% humidity, I'm mad.
Brutal.
I just can't do it. I hate it.
Josh went away to Maryland. What was Maryland like?
Rhode Island, actually.
Rhode Island,
but it was just as hot, and we actually, for one of the days, had a generational hailstorm.
Generational hair. Careful with the word generational.
That's what people there were saying.
Okay.
That's not me. That's Rhode Islanders.
Does that make it? Does that mean the size of the hail, or
I think it was more so the amount. Like, there were videos that we saw. We stayed with some of my girlfriend's family just outside of Providence, and we were out away for the day in Newport, which is like an hour away, and it was gorgeous all day long, beautiful, nice sunny skies, and right at the end of the day it started to rain. We were like, oh, this kind of stinks, whatever, let's go home. Mm-hmm. As we're driving home, we're seeing more and more like down tree branches, signal lights are out, mm-hmm. like all this like storm damage. And we were like, what happened here? And we asked one of their neighbors, and they're like, yeah, we had hail, we had wind, we had thunder and lightning. It was crazy. And there were videos of people shoveling hail.
Like, wow.
Shoveling hail off of their, like, steps and stuff. Like, so.
Like, they just got an ice storm in December.
Yeah, and we were without power for, like, almost 24 hours. It was kind of crazy, but.
Wow.
You know, that was something. But then all the other days were great, so that was good.
That's good.
I got a lot of sun too. I also had a bird pooped on me on the beach. I was laying there taking a nap, and nice wake up call.
So you were laying out, like you were stationary, you weren't walking?
Yeah, I was laying down, just hanging out, sitting in the
and
sun.
And there it was.
Yep.
What percentage of people have had that happen to them, we think? Does it happen more than we think?
Have either of you guys?
Never.
I've caught in a real light shrapnel at some point. I know that. But never blown like beach laying down right on the chest.
Wasn't
sort of
a direct hit.
There's
what percentage of people do we think that has happened to?
Isn't it good luck?
Do we think it's happened to 50% of people at some point in their lives? Just once.
50 seems high.
50. A lot of people, you get how many summers? There's a lot of summers. Some people live in areas where there's birds all the time.
Right. Yeah. I think it probably also depends on what you're doing with your life day to day based on how much you're outside. I mean, it never happened to me when I was like outside building houses on roofs. Never happened out there.
Unsurprisingly, there's no statistically backed percentage of this, but
no studies.
No, there's no studies on this, but it does seem like it's not super high, but it's not actually that low either.
I would bet it's happened to more people than I bet we think. Well, there's July 7th, so we are still, in the middle of the football quiet season. NFL Top 100 continues. The Sabres made some news yesterday. I woke up this morning thinking about the Bills' regular season and how important that feels this year to everybody. I got a point to make about why you should care. If you are in the camp of, talk to me in January, and not to say you don't enjoy the Bills' regular season. Of course, we still have training camp to go through in the preseason. But if you are one that will watch the games and enjoy them, but the results, maybe you don't live and die by them because you expect the Bills to win the division, you expect them to make the playoffs, you expect Josh Allen to be in the running for MVP, but you're mostly, talk to me in January. I'm living for January right now when it comes to the Bills. I've got one reason why, and it does relate to January, you should care a lot about this regular season and something the Bills haven't done yet and one thing that really could help them go on a run. But before we get into some football, because I do want to do that, and we've got some guests. Paul Hamilton's going to come up at 7 this morning to talk about the Bo Byram arbitration. And at 8:30, we'll talk to Kevin Oestreicher. We'll start going through the Bills' schedule team by team. So today, the Ravens, week one, and what's happened with their offseason and if their roster is still as well built around Lamar Jackson as it was last year, which I think was a reason why he did not win MVP. You had better stats, but you had more help. And then finally, at 9 o'clock, we'll get some fantasy football in with Adam Krautwurst. But to start on what the Sabres did yesterday, because I was surprised, caught off guard by the team opting for arbitration with Bo Byram, who still is a Buffalo Sabre. on July 7th. And if you're maybe you were on vacation for a couple of weeks and you unplugged and thought, all right, let me see what the Sabres have done. Surely they must have traded Bo Byram away. They have not. And now they are making a additional move decision with him. The player, I guess, gets first crack at this. And the player decided, no, I don't need it. I don't want arbitration. And for one reason that I think we all discovered reading the situation and seeing like why the Sabres might have done this is now Bo Byram cannot sign an offer sheet. And if he had opted for arbitration, he would have known that. So then it's the Sabres' turn to decide whether or not they would like to do it. And they go ahead and say, yeah, we'll do arbitration, which, hey, that can get ugly between players and between teams, but the Sabres, I'm sure, do not currently view this as a long-term relationship. They might think that any day, any minute, he's going to get dealt. So it's a leverage play. He no longer can sign that offer sheet with any team. As of right now, he is ineligible for it. So if there was a consideration out there between Byram and whoever. I saw there was an article about the Sharks and Byram from yesterday, but they wouldn't do it, you think, because of how high their pick would be, but whatever. That there was a real threat of teams, you know, vulturing around Byram and thinking, all right, we can get this guy in an offer sheet. We could really test the Sabres. We could really put a front-loaded money contract on the books and do it long-term, and we don't think they want to do a long-term deal. So, and they might know Byram wants out because not he doesn't have a problem with Buffalo or a problem with the Sabres even, but he just wants a bigger role, and he wants big money. So if a team came at the Sabres and tested them on that, they would have had a pretty tough decision. Because if you want to move Byram off your team for something that will help you right now, well, that's over. You cannot do that. He signs an offer sheet. It is either you're keeping him or you're taking the draft pick compensation. And if you're keeping him, you're not allowed to trade a guy for a full year after you decide to match that offer sheet. And the Sabres would have been, I think, in a little bit of a tricky situation had that happened. So with this, they get to throw that out the window. And what is also interesting now is they have no restraints on that remaining cap space. Not to say they'll use it, because I'm very skeptical that they will use it, but as of right now, $13.6 million, which even Kevin Adams, I think, had alerted everyone to last week when he spoke, that they needed to hold on to some cap space in the event that Byram got offer sheeted. You got to have it ready so that if somebody comes calling and makes you make a decision, you have the available room to match. As they said, they would match anything. Well, now you can't. Now there's no reason to match. So, all right, but, you know, we're a week after free agency, and everybody's gone. Nikolaj Ehlers signed with Carolina over the weekend, and not to say the Sabres were, I think, necessarily a strong bidder on him anyway. The list is, like, what are you supposed to do with it? Now it's to the trade market. And I don't know whether to buy this because it's Alan Walsh, the J.J. Paterka's agent. He's the NHL agent that has his own Twitter account, that he's always talking and whatnot. And he did say last week that there is still so much unused cap space in the next couple of years with the cap going up that expect the trade market to really heat up this week. Take that for what it's worth. You heard a lot of going into the NHL draft from certain insiders. This is going to be a busy one. Everybody's home and they got, you know, they've got their deals lined up because they're not waiting to get onto the floor together. So maybe some things would be more advanced. And then NHL draft night showed up and there was nothing. Nothing. No action, no big trades, really. Nothing big happened. So, false alarm. And this is probably, I would say, another false alarm. But there is a lot of unused cap space around the league. The Sabres, I don't think they want to necessarily go to arbitration. I don't think they want this situation to drag on and drag on with Byram. I don't even think he's really worth it. I think he's a good player. And I think you would get some pushback from some on even calling him that. And there might be some others that think he's even better than that. That, oh, he's great. Look at, I mean, what was he, 15th in the league last year in even strength points amongst defensemen? And that's without, doesn't get power play time and put up 40 points last year. Like, no, this guy's really, really good. And then there's another camp that I think has a lot of data behind them that looks at Bo Byram and says, yeah, this guy is only good when he plays with Rasmus Dahlin or Cale Makar, which, you know, that could be a lot of people. That could be, is he the Marquez Valdez Scantling of the NHL? Where, oh yeah, you put up some numbers in your career, but you've played with Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. Like, congratulations. You had a lot of help going your way over those couple of years where you're putting up some numbers. And Byram has had that. He was also a very high draft pick, which I think helps in his favor as well. I think he was fourth overall. So maybe it depends how good you actually think the player is. I don't think he is near good enough to warrant all of this. Is it even a problem, though, calling it a headache? I wouldn't want to call it a headache. It is the point in the year where there's really not a lot else happening in the NHL. Free agency's mostly settled down. Teams have built their squads. They've got their trades that they've made. And you'll have a couple of tinkering moves, I think, between now and the start of the season. But I think most teams have done the majority of their work. So who's going to want Byram? And did the Sabres play it well? Because one thing about taking it this far, as they now head into an arbitration battle, potentially, is I do wonder if they would have as big a market today for him as they might have a month ago, right after the season ended.
That's my, I think, biggest unanswered question about this is the organization doing themselves a favor in holding on to this asset for this long, or are they just weeding out the market? Like, is the market just fulfilling itself and basically operating under the assumption that we're the price is too high for Byram, so let's find our other moves. And then will the Sabres be stuck with going to arbitration with Byram and then, you know, kind of getting worked out and to walking him straight to UFA in this contract? And I think it gives some leverage now, but I also think it splits it. Like, you right now, to me, you got to be trying to find a sign and trade or somebody to take him off your hands before this hearing. Because he signs this contract for this hearing, and now you're trading for a player that's getting walked straight to their UFA, and you have zero leverage with that guy. If you're the team trade, you know, if, say, whoever, the Rangers is a bad example, but Calgary wants to trade for Bowen Byram now. If they trade for him after this arbitration hearing, you're now purchasing a player for 2 years.
Right.
Most likely. He's not going to, like, you're walking him straight to UFA if he gets that arbitration contract.
Yeah.
And then you're in trouble. So that just lessens your value more.
That's if he goes for 2 years also. So if you're not familiar with how this works, when the team decides to take you to arbitration, the player gets to decide the term.
Right.
And I think though it's only 1 or 2 years.
Correct.
So that I've seen a lot of that. That, well, now he can go for 2 years and now he's under contract until he's a UFA. I don't know though that he would want to do that. Because if he's expecting a trade, which I still think he should be, then signing a 2-year deal makes him ineligible, I believe, to sign the long-term extension right now
right.
with whatever team he might get dealt to. And if he goes to, let's use Calgary, because Calgary has been mentioned, you just use them, and they've been reportedly interested, and that's close to home for him in comparison. Right. He's from the Vancouver area, so it's closer, obviously, by a lot. And they need a guy. They need a guy to play on the power play and play big minutes. So, all right, Calgary trades for him, and he likes the idea. He's like, I could see a role here for myself. I could put up big numbers, and I'm closer to home than I was in Buffalo by a lot, and the team was better last year, so I've got that going for me. Yeah, I think I'd like to stay here. Oh, wait a minute. I signed a 2-year contract. Right. Now, he might not care that much because, you know, just in a year I'll sign it. In a year I'll be eligible for the 7-year extension. Give me some time. But if he would like to get that big payday right now, then he makes himself ineligible by going for a 2-year deal.
Yeah, I think...
Depends.
I think it depends on what he wants to do, but I would be very surprised to see him as a player that is his caliber...
Give away that. He would be giving away a little bit of leverage.
Yeah,
it would be a high risk,
right?
Low reward.
The other benefit of that is you do 2 years. That's another year of that cap, you know, blowing up.
Yeah.
And that's just another couple of million you can stuff in your pockets. I think that he has very little motivation to do anything other than say, all right, give me the 2 years. I'm secured in this, whatever it's going to be, $7.5 million contract that he'll be awarded in arbitration for 2 years, and then I get to go do whatever I want, wherever I want. And then you're golden. And I think he's not unbelievable. I agree with you. I don't think he's some sort of franchise changer or anything like that. But he's a good defenseman. He in the right situations. As almost any player in the NHL is, it's hard to transcend your environment as a player in the NHL in a lot of ways. There's very few guys that can do that, and he is certainly not one of those. But he's an asset. He's a good player that people want and are attracted to. So he knows that. His agent knows that. And he knows if I can get a respectable contract out of this arbitration hearing, I can make a whole lot more money than I could if I signed a long-term extension right now, even. And I think the only reason he didn't probably, that camp didn't decide, let's do arbitration ourselves, is they wanted the offer sheet possibility as an ejector button.
I'm sure they wanted that still out there.
And so the Sabres have decided to take that away, but I think with that, they've also sacrificed a little bit of their leverage here.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see where it plays out. I got to think and got to hope that they're looking for a move before that hearing.
Yep.
It's got to be your best course of action at this point.
I would agree. I would think a trade at some point is still likely, but who knows? I don't think those hearings happen until August.
It's late July, I believe.
Late July. Okay. So there's weeks to go. So really, I'm not on alert right now that it's going to happen any second. Like, it could happen today. It could happen in 2.5 weeks.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, none of that would be surprising.
Yeah. And there's also a chance that they've made the decision, all right, we're just going to go with him for the next 2 years and see what happens.
Yep.
There's also that, you know, possibility mixed in here.
Yep. 803-0550 is the phone number. We will get into some football today. Talk about the Bills regular season and what's on the line this regular season for the Bills. It might feel like not as much as last year. Last year was very much just get in. We're not really sure how good this roster is. They're not even favored to win the division, although that was only for a day where the Jets were favored at a couple of different sports books. But hey, the Jets with Rodgers and the Dolphins, this is going to be a fight. And then the Bills won it and cruised. So now I don't have to think about that. I don't have to worry about it, I would say, at the very least. So what do I got? And I do think there is something to be very motivated for the Bills regular season. So get to some of that. Paul Hamilton's coming up at 7. Get his thoughts on this Byram situation now. The Sabres have made an arbitration move here to file for that. So get Paul's take on all that. Talk some Ravens, talk some fantasy. Have a lot of fun. You got a thought? 803-0550 is the phone number. Jeremy's off this week. Jody Biasi, Owen Parker, Josh Schmidt, all hanging out here in WGR.
Alvarado the fake. Now it's hooked in. It takes a flick and it's in. It's Edson Alvarez. The flag comes up for offside. Mexico have had multiple goals ruled out for offside at this tournament.
Stays together, and then do they step? It's not on this one. It's the second one. Oh, boy. Looks like Edson Alvarez, he might be onside there and kept on as the U.S. were trying to step out.
And it is a good goal. It is a Mexico goal. It is Edson Alvarez who's given Mexico the lead with 12 minutes to play.
The U.S. falls in the Gold Cup final to Mexico. 1 year away from the FIFA World Cup in the U.S. with their quote-unquote golden generation. And I feel like every time they play, it's like, uh-oh, this is what we got for next year. It's not going great. They did. We talked to Brian Mazurowski down the hall from WBEN, who's very in on this, that the U.S. finally went for the big European manager, and it's still just not going great. And how many right now that aren't plugged in like day to day on the U.S. men's national team are like, oh, yeah, this is same old same. They've been telling me for 20 years that they're finally going to be great, and they're never gonna actually going to be great. So we'll see. World Cup next year. A lot of soccer right now. The Club World Cup has been kind of a flop, I think. I saw a story that ticket prices for the semifinal for the Club World Cup that they're having here in the U.S. with all the top clubs in the world. Ticket prices originally were $300, the lowest ticket price for the semifinal, and they have slashed the prices to $13 because they are so afraid of having an empty building, which they've had a lot of during this tournament. So that's not going great. They'll have no problems like that for the World Cup next year, but for the Club World Cup, it has been it's been an issue. 803-0550 is the phone number. It's a beautiful Monday morning. Jeremy White's off this week. Jody Biasi, Nate Geary will be in with me tomorrow. Of the things that are going on right now in sports, Wimbledon, right? The John Deere Classic from the weekend, although if you're a big golf fan, you would have known there weren't many big names in the field. It was very slim pickings. This week, the Scottish Open, and then next week is the Open Championship. So we're almost at another golf major, so we're getting there. I mentioned all the soccer that's going on right now. And then baseball, right now, the Blue Jays have won, I think, is it eight in a row? Eight in a row. And Zach Jones, I saw, went to a game yesterday. It was because he's an Angels fan, though, and that didn't go well for them. So Blue Jays are like the story in the sport right now. So, yeah, I've thought about driving up this week. Quick hour and a half drive up to Toronto, two-hour drive up, depending on the time of day, go see a game because they're playing really good, first place in the AL East. So that's going on, too, right now. And then it's just waiting for training camp for the Bills. And the thing I was thinking about this morning, and the thing the Bills haven't done yet, as we approach camp, and then we'll get to preseason, and then the regular season. There is a preseason game this month, by the way. The Hall of Fame game is at the end of the month. And I don't feel like there is a ton of anxiousness for this Bills regular season. I think everybody is excited for it and can't wait for football to be back. And, you know, that's nearing. This is going to be, I think, a less stressful regular season, assuming that something unforeseen doesn't happen. Where the Bills, I don't even know what it would be, but would lose 2 years ago when they are 6-6 and they lose to Denver and they're firing the coordinator and it's like, what is happening here? There was a point in time where 2 seasons ago, their playoff probability was like 30% to make it. The reason I can't see that happening this year is, one, big difference then to now with confidence in the offensive coordinator. think there's way more confidence right now going into this year with Joe Brady than there would have been then with Ken Dorsey. Dorsey had been here a year, and there were mixed results, mixed feelings on how that had gone. Brady did a phenomenal job in his first full season, and even the half season before that. So I guess the league could catch up to him, but I am not expecting that. And the roster is improved, and they're pretty much a team without holes all over the roster. They've got some spots where maybe you'd like to see them do, you know, better than they are on paper. Safety might be one of them. But there's just not this angst with me about their season. So, not really stressed, but there is absolutely one thing the Bills haven't done yet that I'd love to see them do, and I'm going to be all in on seeing them do. And I put a poll up on Twitter, and half of our voters out of three options are saying the same. Like, the reason that this regular season is important is I am all in on getting the one seed. Every year we talk about it. Every year we follow it during the season. Something to chase, right? But it's not yet happened for them. And I do think there is a huge advantage that comes with it. And if they are ever going to make the Super Bowl, I think we've seen time and time again, they fall on the road. Often at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City. And I know there is also the one time where they did lose here. So for me, like, depending on how important you see the one seed as, there's also how you see the benefit of it. And I think a lot of people immediately jump to, well, I get home field throughout the entirety of the playoffs. And that's great, especially in the final year of Highmark Stadium. To have home field throughout the playoffs in the final year at the stadium would be special. It would be great because it would set up the possibility of the final game in that stadium's history being an AFC championship where you win to go to the Super Bowl. Be an all-time day at that stadium. I'm one that I wouldn't be able to rival. If you were there during the 90s, 51-3, winning Super Bowl, winning AFC championships to advance to the Super Bowl, the comeback game, you've got a million of those. You know, not to say we have none. If you're my age, you've got the New England playoff game, the perfect game. But you don't have a game where you want it to go to the Super Bowl. And that would be awesome. But the real value that I see in getting the one seed, something the Bills have not yet done, is you are guaranteeing yourself the easiest path to getting to the Super Bowl. And you are potentially avoiding Kansas City, which I still want to feel like that is important. Time and time again, they've kind of beaten that respect into you that it would be great to avoid them and to have a run, to have a series of games where you don't have to go to Arrowhead or they don't even have to come here. The evidence of that, in the last four playoffs, really the last three, are the big key to this. You are easily getting the best path. You're getting a free playoff win. That first round bye is critical. Free playoff win. You don't have to potentially lose anybody to injury the week before. You know, I think the rest versus rust debate has leaned rest in recent years as being much more valuable. And then it really sets up for the Bills or whoever would be that one seed winner to have the easier second round game to the point where you might only have to beat one truly elite team to get to the Super Bowl. In the last 3 years, the path of the one seed, starting in 2022, and then I'll work my way up to 2024. Starting in 2022, the one seed's path Jacksonville, Cincinnati. That's it. Just two, remember. You don't have to play that third game. Last year, the Bills go Denver, Baltimore, Kansas City. That's tough. And you could do that, and teams have done that. I think the Chiefs have done something like that 2 years ago. But that's a tough road, even if they are at home. So 3 years ago, Jacksonville and Cincinnati. That was it. That's all Kansas City had to do to reach the Super Bowl. 2023, Houston, followed by Kansas City. That's Baltimore. Baltimore doesn't end up finishing the job there. They lose to the Chiefs. But what was their path? Beat the Texans and then beat Kansas City. And then last year, Kansas City's the one seed. What's their path? Houston, Buffalo. So 3 years in a row, the winner of that one seed in the regular season has not had to play anybody in week one of the playoffs. And then in week two, have had the AFC South winner. And that 4-5 matchup, can't you see that 4-5 game this year being like Houston and Pittsburgh again? Or Houston and the Chargers again? Or whoever that second place AFC West team is, if Kansas City happens to win it again. The odds of it being like a Baltimore or the Chiefs or somebody, the Bengals maybe, you know, maybe the Bengals would be a team that you'd be more worried about for that. But 3 years in a row, it's been that AFC South winner. And not to say that that's a gimme or that that team is a pushover, but kinda. Nobody ever takes the winner of that division seriously. And I can't imagine taking the winner of that division seriously again this year. So really what it is you are most likely, if the Bills are able to go through the regular season, they're able to get that one seed finally, which they've never done, you are most likely eliminating the possibility that you are going to have to play Baltimore and Kansas City in the same playoff run. And I think the value of that is far greater than even just the getting to play home field throughout the playoffs. But of course, you get that as well. So you tell me, how important is this Bills regular season to you? Is the one seed enough to be the end all be all of a 17 game slate? Because I just don't. We've talked about New England and their schedule and them coming up a little bit, but I really just can't realistically see the Patriots or the Dolphins giving the Bills a real fight, a real stressful fight during this season. Let me know what you think. 803-0550 is the phone number. Talk a little more on that, on the importance of this regular season as we get closer and closer, training camp in a couple of weeks. And Hard Knocks as well. 803-0550 is the phone number. Paul Hamilton, is coming up at 7 o'clock. We'll talk more about the Bo Byram situation, and we'll get some more football in after that as well. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is off today, and this is WGR. Welcome back. It's Jeremy and Joe here on WGR. Jeremy is off to the Finger Lakes this week. Was in the lake this weekend. Yeah, I like Lake Erie. It's just very rocky when you're... It definitely does. Where you walk into the lake. The only difference... I feel like I'm already exaggerating. It's a lot. The only difference, there's a lot of differences. The worst difference to me between, you know, hanging out at the lake versus like being at the ocean is where I hang out for Lake Erie. It is rocks everywhere for like the first five to 10 steps of getting into the lake to go hang out. And that's not great.
Yeah. But once you're past that, it's not bad.
That's right. But yeah, like, going to Fort Lauderdale like a month ago, it's just like you walk right out. Perfect.
As someone who was just in the Atlantic Ocean three days ago, it is quite the difference.
Off Rhode Island?
Yeah. It's nice over there. The beaches they have, like honestly, sometimes it feels like you're in Florida. It doesn't even feel like you're in the Northeast.
Yeah. You saw Taylor Swift's house?
I did, yes.
In Rhode Island?
Yeah, she
I would have not known she had a house in Rhode Island.
Yeah, it's in this place everywhere. Called Watch Hill. It's like, if you could picture where every billionaire would have like a secret hideaway, that would be the place to go.
Interesting.
The houses there
well,
are
I think,
massive.
Well, not anymore. Josh has spoiled well, it. Everybody so. Knows where they are. Where they are now.
No, this house is incredible. It's like right off the, it's like right near a lighthouse. It's up on a mountain, essentially, and it's
yeah.
massive. It's got like a giant gate at the end of the driveway, but then if you walk down towards the lighthouse, you can look back and see the house, and it's like right by a beach and everything too. So it's pretty cool. And like,
yeah,
my girlfriend's brother was like, "Oh yeah, that's her house," and I'm like,
"Interesting,
really?" And I guess she was there like 2 years ago for 4th of July, so she does go there somewhat. So
okay,
yeah.
The other thing that happened this week, by the way, is we got ESPN on here right now. Anybody watching a lot of Wimbledon right now? Alcaraz. Tennis is funny because they've had like three on the men's side, three Michael Jordans in the last 20 years. In that, like, three dudes won every major. Djokovic, I saw a stat yesterday. I guess I didn't really truly realize how many he's won. I think it's 24. He's won 24 majors. And Federer and Nadal are both up there too. Carlos Alcaraz. He moves. I'm trying to think which of those three moved like this. Nadal, probably. He moves from side to side running across the court like no one I've ever seen. And I think I want to include those three all-time greats in that. Just how quick he is. How fast. Because when I think of Djokovic, I think more of like power. And Federer, it's more, you know, grace and whatnot. And maybe Nadal is the one that was like, he was flying. He could fly all over the place. Because Alcaraz is fun to watch because of how fast he can be moving. He's like, no ball is ever dead, I feel like, with him. So him jumping up onto the scene after those guys retired, I know Djokovic still plays and is still very, very good, has kept me interested in the sport. So, Wimbledon. When we get back, we'll get back to some hockey. Paul Hamilton will join the show on Bo Byram and this arbitration hearing that the Sabres will have with him eventually if he's not traded, and why the Sabres decided to do this. We'll get to that with Paul coming up next here on WGR.